Oh, baby. I've been waiting a while to do this one. Golf show. Gunning and McKee. I don't know if you heard what happened in the world of golf, but Rory McIlroy is a major champion again, including wearing his green jacket. Sammy, yes. How you doing today, bud?
I will say that I didn't realize my brand as a Rory hater was as strong as it was until yesterday, really, because I sent out some incendiary RJ tweets, as you probably saw. I think at the 9th hole, the 10th hole, I said, what is Nance Call going to be when he wins here? Like, I was really going full press. You were experiencing the RJs as well. And I got to be honest, man, I felt guilty. I felt very guilty, and I felt very bad for all of those things that I said and all the mean things that I've said about Rory. I feel awful after what I saw it meant to him on the 18th green the second time yesterday. That is my biggest takeaway, is how bad I feel for rooting against this guy for as long as I have, because yesterday was one of the truly special moments in the history of the sport, and I will always cherish it, Gunner. I have to tell you.
Our life as sports fans prepares us for the moments we'll have, and it's good that you got a chance to practice feeling bad, because we all had that when Hideki Matsuyama running away with his Masters, and we were kind of cheering against him, and then his caddy bowed after taking out the pin, and we have never felt more collectively bad as a society. I kind of know how you're feeling, man, because obviously the stakes aren't quite the same. I remember watching Bryson win the U.S. Open, and you know how I felt on the other side of that thing, but I felt happy for the guy. But this is one of those moments in sports where everybody has a dog in the fight, right? Especially individual sports. People just rub people the right way or the wrong way. It's so rare we get the thing where there's just 1,000% unanimous crowd approval. Like, the Q rating is through the roof on this one. You have to be a soulless ghoul to be unhappy with how that played out. I mean, we could sit here and literally just go shot by shot, but I actually think there's been 77,000 golf podcasts that have done that today. So I kind of wanted to set it up a little bit differently. Again, you were sending me the RJs. You're trying to reverse jinx me and my man all day long.
No question.
The way I wanted to start was, like, when we felt it was most going to happen and when we felt it was most not going to happen. I'll go first. And there's an actual, like, deeper answer to this, but I'll be honest. I texted it to you. He misses the fairway on one. And I go, it's over. It's over. There's no way this can happen. So I felt like it was not going to happen from the literal outset. Obviously, like, there are moments later on in the round that made me actually feel that way. But, I mean, I'll put it to you. When was the moment you most thought the collapse was coming?
That's a great question. I think the wedge on 18, and not even the wedge on 13. Because I don't know if there's ever been a more, you know, shot that an amateur golfer could step up there and be like, I could get that on the green. If I had 10 tries, I might probably get that on the green, what, 6 times? 5 times? Like, maybe the stakes are different, clearly. And to have him do that in that spot and put it in the bunker, I just simply knew there was no way that he was going to make par there. I knew he was going to have that length of putt. I even texted you in the group. Like, that par putt better be pretty short, because it felt like if it was anything outside of 4 feet or 3 feet, there was no way that it was going to hit the bottom. So when it hit that sand, I really thought it was over, Gunner. I really thought he was going to bogey that hole and then go to a playoff, be absolutely shell-shocked, and not be able to perform against his good buddy Justin Rose, and I thought it was over. So when the ball hit the sand on 18 with a simple wedge shot for one of the best golfers in the world, that was my moment when I thought it was over.
Yeah, I mean, 13 is obviously the one that I think jumps out to most people, right? You dunk that flip wedge after laying up in the creek, and you think it is over. Can I be honest with you? So he dumps it in the bunker on 18 in regulation.
Yeah.
And this is what sports does to you, man. I'm sitting there all day believing it's not going to happen. He misses the fairway on one, and I'm already, like, writing the text that's really just a middle finger to you, but with a lot more words in there. I'm already doing that. But the smallest piece of me said, because it can never be easy, I honestly, for half a second, thought he was going to hole out from the bunker like he did 3 years ago when he was playing with Morikawa.
And did the weirdest celebration of all time?
Right, when he's like, what is going on here? I don't, why is this happening? Is actually like what the celebration was. Like, why? Why do this to me, golf gods? But honestly, that was it. That was the moment that was what was going through my head. You talk about, okay, when we most thought it was over. He's sitting there on 18, and I guess I should just know better than to think it was ever going to be easy or that good things can happen. I called my kid down to the basement to show him the shot on 18. And he dumped it in the bunker, and I didn't explicitly say, this is all your fault. Why did you come down here? But let me tell you something. He did not watch the rest of golf with dad. So, yeah, that was the moment I most thought it was happening. I really thought just with that little natural backstop there, like you said, it's 100 and whatever, 30 yards.
Wasn't
even 120, wedge.
125, flip wedge. Easy
flip
shot.
Gap wedge for him with the backstop there, and he just bonks it to the right. God. And then to have the exact same shot in the playoff. I know we're going all over the place here, but man, so many swings. And it, again, like the fact that we lived a lifetime until the 18th hole, and then we live seven lifetimes into the playoff and everything that happened there. It's just, it is going to be a long, long time until I see something that special, for sure in golf, but honestly in sports, man.
Yeah. So I, last year after the Panthers won the cup, I'm not sure if it was on my show or if it was in a post game thing. All the things that have happened kind of have melded together. I don't remember where Maurice said this, but it could have very well been on Real Kipper and Born because we had him on early to start the year, but it might have been right after. So here we go. He was talking about, he got asked about do you ever let your mind go to where you guys blow that? Like, do you ever think to yourself, what would you have done? What kind of person would you be? And he honestly, audibly grimaced and basically was like, no, I can't live in that world. And I truly don't know how Rory McIlroy continues if he doesn't win after that shot on 18. I don't know, let alone win the Masters, let alone pick up a golf club ever again. I can't, the gravity of that moment and the regret and, how emotional. I even went to the Church of Rory, Gunner. I watched his entire 30-minute press conference after, which I thought was fantastic. A fabulous press conference. As good a performance on the course he had in the press room after, where all the media is just, they're down on their knees at the Church of Rory just praying to him. But I don't know, man. He's just such a vulnerable guy. And I don't know if he ever recovers. Those were bad. The heartbreak was bad at the U.S. Open, no question. A couple missed ones. But it would not have been nearly as bad as this. With that, they put up the graphic for the career grand slam. It's a, 10-footer? Ugh! He'd never sleep again. He'd never be able to look at a golf ball again. That gravity of that moment to me will always stick out. And I'll always wonder what would have happened to this guy if he doesn't beat Justin Rose in that playoff.
Yeah, I think he just ceases to exist. Think he just spontaneous. No, I think the golf gods and God himself just says, you know what, man, it's too hard. And they just spontaneously combust him on the spot. What happened to Rory? He vanished in a puff of dust and he was literally never seen from again. He would turn into that Malaysian Airlines plane. I don't know. I don't know. He's just gone. I don't know what happened. What happened there? The idea of that moment sitting there. How do you go on from that? I mean, there's so many things. Okay, so let's do a few of the big beats. We kind of hit them, but okay, staying dry on 11 is, the greatest of great golf breaks that you can ever ask for. There, every shot like that I have ever seen in the history of mankind has got wet. I don't know how that stays up, but because the ghosts of Rory are so real, and obviously, I didn't actually think he was going to do this, but he's chipping that, and I'm just sitting there going, don't fat this and hit it in the water or something along those lines. That's how much the ghosts and goblins were poking around there. So he stays dry on 11. You want to talk about moments where you truly do believe, and you tried to tell me, hey, after 12, he stays dry, he makes his par. Uh-huh. That is it. Now, I'm going to pull back the curtain here. You were trying to get me to say, hey, that's it, right? And what did I tell you? I said 15 is where it fell apart on Thursday.
Yeah.
Let's see him get through 15. But can I be honest with you? When he pipes his tee shot on 13, I texted our our mutual friend and, I don't know, like archdiocese at the Church of Rory, Adam Stanley.
Wow.
And I went, oh my God, what's happening? Not like he's doing it or anything along those lines. Got no response back.
Yeah, of course.
And then 9 seconds after he dunks it in the water, I just get a text back from him. What have you done putting this all on me? So it was all on me. That was the moment I truly let myself believe and then never believed, because I believed for a second. I said, he has a flip wedge here. He's going to stick this to 8 feet. Worst case scenario, he makes his par and gets out of Dodge.
Yeah.
And it's another double. Just nuts, nuts, nuts that he got wet on 13 and still managed to win this tournament.
Can I tell you that I hated the way he played 13 right from the jump?
I agree.
You're Rory McIlroy, buddy. The best driver in the world. Blast your drive out there, 320 yards, have a 215-yard 7 or 6 iron, flip it up near the green, get it on, maybe putt it in for a birdie. Like, the way that your strength is an 80-yard flip shots. We know that. Your strength is power. Your strength is length. And I just, as soon as he pulled a 3-wood on that tee, I was like, oh, I don't like this. Because he's obviously going to lay up. And I thought to myself, this seems like a not Rory decision here. And I get it. At that point, he had a bigger lead. I understand that. You know, you're trying to play a little bit more conservatively. But oftentimes, when you start to get a little bit conservative, bad things happen. And he just hits the worst wedge shot of his life. He's had some bad ones in his career. Clearly, wedge game has always been sort of an issue for him. But that's as bad as he can ever hit, considering the situation. And, there's a Leaf game going on. I do a Leafs post game show. So I was a good boy yesterday. I put the Leafs game on the big TV. I had my laptop going with the Masters. And I looked away for a second because it's a non-consequential shot. It's an 80-yard wedge. He's going to put it to whatever, either 10 feet or 15 feet or whatever, and he's going to get out of there with a birdie or a par. And I had the sound on my laptop, and they went, oh, like the ooh, and I looked over, and my wife, I was like, did he put that in the water, Allie? And she's like, what? She wasn't paying attention at all, but I couldn't believe that it happened. Like, I looked away because it was so automatic. So the fact he makes double there, that is a moment where you're like, oh my God, he really is going to blow this. But that was his first of multiple blowing it. So yeah, that was a really, really shaking hole that's what happened. Couldn't believe that happened.
So in any other world, that wedge shot is far and away the worst golf shot that someone hits on the day. And I mostly agree that it is. But was it worse than the putt on 2? The one, it was either on 1 or 2, I'm trying to remember, where it didn't sniff the hole. He hit it 5 feet past and 5 feet wide on one of the doubles that he started with there. And it's just, there were so many shots like that on a day where he also hits some of the most incredible golf shots I've ever seen in my life. So let's move now to the shot heard around the world now, I guess, which is the swinging draw on 15 to give himself the eagle look. I first question is kind of a complicated one, but since he misses the eagle putt, like, how do we actually rank that shot? Like, you know, when we think of the Tiger chip, it wasn't great because it hung up on the ledge. It was great because it dropped. You know, we think of Louis Oosthuizen, his albatross on 2, not because he, like, gave himself an eagle tap in, because it actually went in. That will be the sitting image from it. Like, when you look at a shot that was hit, that with the tracer and everything, it's so beautiful. But, man, if he just eagles that, I suppose I should say it's over, but given the way everything else played out, I'm sure he would have found some way for it not to have been.
As you know, Gunner, he needed every stroke that he could get. So the fact that he set up himself up for a birdie to get into that position, like, I know he should have hit the eagle putt. But on the same shot, the Tiger one, didn't Tiger miss the putt too? I think Tiger missed the putt on that same shot that they had there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a little bit serendipitous to that. But he needed that extra stroke. I mean, that got him back. Like, I mean, he gets a birdie, gets back into the, you know, on the red side of things. That feels good. I don't think it really is ever going to matter that he missed. Like, some golf hardo will be like, oh, well, you know, he missed the putt. Well, he won the Masters. And that was a crucial, crucial, gutsy, all swag, big you-know-what swinging shot right to what would it end up being, 6 feet from behind a tree. I think that is the signature moment. Like, let's not sleep on 17. 17 is an incredibly crucial one for him to get that birdie and to go one up to give himself the room to even bogey 18. But yeah, I think when I think back to this, outside of the little short putt for birdie on the last playoff hole and him falling to his knees, that will be the first sort of image that comes to my mind with him strutting in that an unbelievable shot tracer around the tree.
Yeah, and just to your point about how he played 13, right? That's Rory McIlroy. It's not chunking, something down there to give himself a cheeky wedge. You know, I'm really about to get in the church of Rory here, but it's like, you know, one of his non-major and iconic wins, one of them that he had, is the Irish Open. And you know how he sealed it? He grabbed a hybrid or a three wood or something from two plus away, and guess what he did? He stuck it to 8 feet and he made a putt. That's what he does. When you give this guy a long club in his hands and force him to make a shot, that's when he's at his best. And that is just the perfect kind of microcosm of it there. You know, all these moments that are going to stand out. I actually think it's funny. Like, there will be the visual. There will be the moment we remember. I think the audio track of it will be Rory turning in to all of us on 17. We hear get up or legs from guys all the time. I cannot ever remember hearing a player sound like what I imagine their dad sounds like watching them going, please, please,
know,
please.
Right?
It wasn't like get legs, or it wasn't I'm aggro. I just hit a great shot.
It wasn't be right when you know it's perfect.
Yeah.
It was please God.
Please God. Like the actual pleading with the golf gods.
Yeah, yeah.
That was honestly in a day where he sat there and soliloquied for 7 hours afterwards.
Yeah.
That was the most honest moment of the day. That was him wanting it. That was it. I feel like his voice almost cracked. Like he was the kid from The Sims, like, please.
Please, please. So yeah, no, that was, I mean, 17 is such a funny hole, right? Because it's such an afterthought between 16 and 18, but it's turned out to be so crucial for so many winners. Like you think back to yes, sir, in 86, right? Like that's one of the more crucial spots. That shot was just so beautiful. And I thought for sure when he missed the putt on 16, like he sets himself up so nicely on 16, he doesn't hit that putt. And that 17th drive is such a nervy one. He set himself up nicely, hit a great shot, pleaded it for it, and then he hit a putt, and then he goes to the 18th, and we all know what happens there. But yeah, that 17th will really always go down in history as one of the more important holes in his career. He needed birdie there, and he got it.
And he got it. Yeah, he turned into Sabrina Carpenter there. Please, please, please. He's just begging. I'm begging you, please. In terms of what we saw there, let's try to write a little fanfic now.
Okay.
Looking ahead.
Okay.
I think we know, like, okay, Tiger has returned. I mean, hey, I suppose Tiger could come back from an Achilles when he's 50 years old and win a Masters, but I'm not holding my breath for that one because I wasn't holding my breath for the last one. Is there anything you can think of that doesn't top this? Because nothing can top this, because we have to fast forward 15 years from now for some guy to have all the scar tissue of all time. But is there anything you can think of that could top this from a, I don't even mean from a crossover standpoint, but just from an emotional equity or a kind of stakes standpoint? I've been workshopping this a little bit.
Does it have to be Masters or all golf?
No, you can give it to me in golf. I did have a Masters that I was thinking of. I mean, if you're going to give me Spieth or Phil the Grand Slam.
Phil is the one.
Okay. Like, got it.
That which is literally never going to happen.
Right.
But Phil has the most, I mean, you know, you can talk about Spieth winning the PGA Championship and sure, like, there's a million huge Spieth fans and that would mean a ton to, like, a ton of people. But having the last leg be the least cared about major is what I think would make that nowhere near as close, right? Like, if I'm telling somebody, like, oh, Spieth's got to win the PGA Championship to complete the career Grand Slam, people aren't going to care one iota as much as Rory McIlroy having to win the Masters to have the career Grand Slam. So I think the only one that really would have the crossover would be Phil somehow winning the U.S. Open, but there's just simply no way that's going to happen. So I really don't think there's anything close. What's your pitch?
No, okay. So we have to hop in a time machine because we are 15 years from now.
It's
not now. There's nothing There's nothing now. Like, what? Oh, what? Like, well, okay, you know what? I'll give you my pitch for right now, and guess what? It's 1/15th of as good as we got. Rory McIlroy next year is your defending Masters champ. He is getting ready to slip the green jacket on whoever it is who's defending. He has had a respectful tournament, but not in the mix. And we get a final pairing of Brooks and Bryson. And they're both at the peak of their powers, and it's not a pillow fight. It is a knife fight, and we're having eagles and birdies back and forth. And then you throw in the idea of McIlroy being there, lurking in the mix with those two specifically. But guess what that is? That's cool. But that's like 1/10th, 1/1000th of what we just saw. No, the pitch for what this could be going forward.
Oh, I thought
is,
that was going to be the pitch. I was like, okay,
oh, no, that's the pitch for right now. That's,
that's like
as close as we could do. Right.
I'm throwing you out of the boardroom for that pitch.
You are the gif of the umpire. Just he out of here.
Yeah.
No, the pitch for going forward is we basically have to recreate Rory McIlroy. We need Ludvig Åberg to go win two or three majors.
Yeah.
And I don't even need it to be the career Grand Slam. But if let's just, and I don't want to live in this world for this guy because I think you and I are both fans of the guy. He looked great in all his Adidas gear.
He's
this,
a weapon.
This weekend. He
total
really is
hunk.
Just all-time hunk, Ryder Cup stud, winner, everything you like.
Yeah.
But if he goes out and wins, I don't know, let's say he wins three majors or something like that. It's a Brooks Koepka three majors.
Yeah.
It's, you know, two U.S. Opens and a PGA or whatever, or an Open Championship. And he continues to be this guy at Augusta, where he's always like, man, he's never not been right there.
Yeah, he lurked
and
big time both years.
Yeah, and we will always have that ball hopping in to the pond on 11 like it should have for Rory.
Yeah.
And he just continues to have these close calls. And there have to be a few that go like Rory, where it's right there. And maybe there's the big blow up one year. But honestly, you have to recreate Rory McIlroy to have anything close to it feeling like this. And guess what? Ludvig Åberg, already behind schedule, hasn't done all the stuff at the age that Rory had done all the stuff.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I honestly am sitting here trying to do it. And there's nothing in the game right now. I don't care. You could give me 10 golfers and tell me they're all tied for the lead and somehow they're all playing in a tensome on 15. And it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter. The stakes and the scar tissue and everything. And the side. The fact that people had kind of picked a side on this. Like, I don't think anybody, like even you, a Rory hater, it's like you appreciate him. You hate him at moments and you like to poke fun. But I don't think you truly hate the guy. That's why it's just so impossible to ever imagine something living up to this.
Here's, I mean, this, my pitch, that's a good pitch. I'm okay with it.
Thank you.
We'll put a pin in that one and we'll come to my pitch here. But the problem with these, both of these pitches is that they're way down the road. And I do think that it's not a problem for golf in the short term that Rory won this, but this was like the last real compelling golf storyline for a while. This was like what everybody looked forward to every single year was if Rory was going to be able to do this. So, and having said all that, my pitch is the Rory old guy one. Like the Rory Jack one where he's, you know, got a big old barrel and he's wearing a yellow shirt and no hat.
or the
Tiger 2019. Like Rory at age 48 going to Augusta when we all think it's done and he gets one more green jacket. That to me is what the next big kind of story would be. I don't know what in the next, like, I guess it's like I said, it's Spieth at the PGA Championship. That's fine. But Masters wise, you want all these young guys to get one. You'd love to see Xander get one. You'd love to see Åberg get one. You'd love to see maybe Morikawa. All these like young stars coming up. Sure, that's great. But nothing will come close to this for a very long time, and that's good in the short term, but potentially bad in the long term for golf, in my opinion, Gunnar.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is one thing that changes that, though.
Mm.
And I'm not calling this, and maybe this will lead me into our favorite game to play after a guy wins a major.
Yes.
What if he's Rory McIlroy again? Like, he already has three wins this year. In the whole time that he's sucked in terms of winning majors, he has been one of, if not the most dominant golfers in the world.
Yeah.
What if Tiger's back? Like, nobody's going to be Tiger. I want to be very clear about that. Like, the idea of Rory versus the field will always be laughable just with, one, the scar tissue that we have seen, and two, the depth of talent now. But I mean, what if he rips off two majors this year? And I don't, like, I'm including this one, but what if he rips off three majors, including the one he just won? I do think that is the thing that golf hasn't had in a while. You know, it felt like it was Scheffler. It felt like it, right? He's won two majors and both of them are at the same place and they're 2 years apart. That's the thing that golf hasn't had. We've had moments where it felt like it. Mm-hmm. Rory felt like it, and then he completely went away. And, oh, is it going to be Dustin Johnson? No, it's not. Is it going to be Jordan Spieth? No, it's not. Is it going to be Bryson? No, it's not. Koepka? No. That's the only thing that can be good. Let me be very clear. This is great for golf. The golf is front page news for everything. But I do think there's totally a world where Rory just becomes, again, the guy he once was. And we get in the world where, you know, we set the over-under at 1.5 majors every year. And is it a little high? Probably, but it doesn't feel foolish. I do wonder what that does to the state of the conversation. And it's one, because we've never, I mean, maybe LeBron is this guy to some people. We've never had a guy going from being the choker of chokers to the winner of winners.
Yeah, you know, it's quite a flip.
Ovechkin won once, right? Yeah. He didn't go from being the guy who never got over the hump to turning into Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
And Crosby was just always Crosby. LeBron is the one guy I think you can point to like he went from choker to clutch, I suppose, but he's just such a larger-than-life figure, team sports, all of that. I think that's the one story we've never I can't remember telling in sports, other than if it's about a team of guys who went from chokers to clutch. And if Rory just becomes that guy all of a sudden, I do wonder what that does to the general interest in it.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, watching that press conference yesterday, Gunner, I think he's a big time danger man heading into every tourney that he plays now, because, you know, you can talk about the enjoyment that he had and like the happiness that he had, but you get the same feeling I do, right? More relief than and happiness.
Totally.
And that relief, that those four footers now at the U.S. Open, they look like a tap in. Those, you know, that 10 footer looks like a 3 footer. He's just the amount of weight that came off of his shoulder. I'll go as far as to say, I think he'll win 2 more majors in his career. I'm not going to say that he's going to win one or two or three more this year, but I think he's got a couple more in him now that he's got this weight off his shoulder. Could it be more than that? For sure. But I just think the way golf is right now, the state of golf, guys are unbelievable. There's just so many threats. I mean, look at this leaderboard. It was full of studs who were all threatening. And, like, you know, we didn't even mention Patrick Reed, who was in the mix, who dunks one on, what was that, 17, yeah, to go to 9 under. Anyways, I just think there's a ton of studs that could potentially win, and it's really hard to win majors in this era. But I'm willing to say that he could get two. I'd set the over-under for the rest of his career at 2.5. And I would lean slight over under, but you could definitely talk me into the under. I mean, sorry, the over.
That's the perfect line, because I think 2 is fair. Like, the idea that he got the monkey off his back and he's never going to do it again. And I mean, hey, if he gets one more, why can't he get another one after that?
Yeah.
3 feels a little greedy.
Yeah.
But totally doable. Like, hey,
3 will be the Jack Nicklaus 86 Tiger 2019 green jacket. That will be the one we get.
Yeah, and it is 3. Fun. It is just so funny because it all sets up so well for him. I mean, this will be the stat you've heard 10,000 times today already, but he holds the course record at Quail Hollow. Before they redid Port Rush, he held the course record there. Now, he also missed the cut last time they played the Open there. So I don't know, do what you will with that one, but the courses are right there for him. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think 2 is a totally fair expectation for him. 3 feels greedy. But, I mean, honestly, it feels like it's kind of either, like, 1 or 5, if I have to be honest. Like, don't let this guy rip off a couple this year.
Yeah.
Because golf is such a game of runs, especially with the guys at the best. And this at the top, tippy top of it. And this is the most important thing to mention with Rory, is that it feels so weird because he was lost in the wilderness for so long. Of all the guys we thought were Tiger post-Tiger, he's the only one that's come close to sniffing it in terms of consistency and world number one and all that.
And just wins. Awesome. Like, he hasn't had the majors, but he's won so much. Like, he really has.
It actually was very similar to Tiger in his Lost in the Wilderness period. Yep. Not to 19, but that like, what was it, 09 to 15 stretch?
It's a little different.
Well, no, it was a little different, but I mean, just in terms of you're ripping off the wins, but you're not getting the majors.
Lack of majors, sure, is a similarity, but there's a lot of differences. So, I mean, like, you just look at his wins this year, right? He's won at Pebble. He won the AT&T, right? He's now the holder of the Players' Championship. He's won that twice.
Yep.
And he's won, like, he's had, like, a Hall of Fame career before the start of May. Like, it's those three things. It's amazing this year for him. And I like I've said a million times to you, Gunner, you know it well. The audience knows it well. Not a fan. Never really been a fan. I've always resented the next Tiger stuff, and I was very against that, and I tried early, and it kind of flipped for me. But even as a stringent hater, is that right?
Strident?
I don't know. I don't know what the word I'm looking for. A big hater, I will say that I was incredibly happy for him yesterday, and I wouldn't say that I cried. I didn't pull an Adam Stanley. I didn't blubber like a little baby, but I did get choked up when he went down to his knees. Because that was one of the best relief moments I've ever seen out of an athlete, and I'm thrilled for the guy. He deserves it. Like, as much as I don't have to love him, but he has worked his bag off for so long to get another one of these majors, and he has a career Grand Slam, only sixth to ever do it. He is now amongst the greats. He was before, but this puts him on a different level. Huge congrats to him, man. I'm really thrilled for him. Good for him. I got nothing else to say on that. I really, really think it's great. And I'm happy for you and all his fans. It was a spectacular Masters, one of the best of my lifetime. Nothing will ever top 2019, ever. That's the my favorite. I think that's everyone's favorite. But this one will be a close second. No question.
Yeah, no, it's right there. And it is funny. Like, yes, six men have won the career Grand Slam, two of them since 1976, I think. Like, yeah. It's nuts to think how long it's been since somebody's entered that club. But anytime you join a club with Jack, Tiger, and some of their closest friends, and it's not about the guys in the club. It's about the guys on the outside trying to get in. Phil Mickelson, Arnold Palmer, ever heard of him? Jordan Spieth.
It's crazy the guys that haven't done it. And, you know, you think of Greg Norman, and I got reminded. Have you gone back and watched the 96 choke?
No.
Because there was some...
I'm surprised I didn't during the throws of Liv. Seems like something I would have done in the throws of Liv.
For sure. There was some chatter because I think it was the two major champions were something. It was a Justin Ray stat that it was the first time in a long time, or maybe ever, that it was the two holding major champions. Or former major champions. I forget what the stat was, but... they were in the final pair. It was the first time since 1996, which was like one guy who was, you know, was leading and blew it famously, and the other guy came up from behind. So there was a lot of people getting a little bit worried about that stat. But I went back this morning, Gunner, and watched that 96 collapse. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's so bad. It's so bad. He's wearing a stupid hat. Like, it's so bad. Anyways, I'm off track there, but I'm really happy he avoided it because I don't know how he would have gone on if he had blown that yesterday on 18. I really don't.
Yeah, I would have enjoyed this pod immensely less.
I wouldn't even have rubbed it in your face. Like, I was feeling guilty when I said, like, oh, like, because I actually sent a congratulatory, like, a real congratulatory text on 18. Like, I'm trying to go back to where I sent it, but there are a few things I love chirping you about more than Rory, but I will say for you, in this moment, I am very happy. And that was at 5:23. That was on the 18th tee.
And
you said, thanks, but I am staying vigilant for the RJ until... Oh, no, that was an older text. I don't know. I texted you a lot yesterday.
You did.
But that would, like, there was some genuine non-RJs in there that would have been really good RJs, reverse jinxes. But, man, congrats, Gunner. Congrats, brother.
Thank you. I
guess I should address the Bryson thing because I am a Bryson fan. He was garbage yesterday. Garbage, and he did his post game thing, and you could tell that that was a man that was completely shell shocked. He went and good for him. Give him credit for going and talking to Balionis in the I don't know where they do it. Maybe in like the Steve cabin instead of the Butler cabin. I don't know where they do the losers interview, but he was good to talk to her. But he was shell shocked. Like he was like, I didn't expect the greens to be that fast. The moment got to him. And that's what happens at the Masters, where you can compete in other majors. He's won two majors. He was great at Pinehurst last year. You know, but you get into Sunday at the Masters, and you're in the final pair, and it is just there is nothing in sports with the pressure of that. And he got to it, and it got to him, and he fell apart. And, like, he's got to be kicking himself so bad, eh? Like, even if he plays okay, he definitely wins. He definitely wins. That had to help Rory that he was playing like crap, right?
For sure. It makes your own mistakes seem less punitive. And, I mean, that's the bugaboo, right? There have been many boogeymen in this heartbreak session for Rory here, but that was the most recent one. So, there was actually one other thing I wanted to talk about with Bryson. It's like, just this little, I don't know, I feel like maybe I'm arguing to a straw man. You tell me. People saying, you know, Bryson with the comments afterwards of, oh, Rory didn't want to talk to me. Yeah, obviously. Like, this is literally the Tiger playbook of exactly what Tony Finau told us Tiger did on the Sunday. And it's not like he was a jerk. Like, there is a video of them shaking hands on the first tee. It's not like he literally iced him out. So was Rory feeling it? Was Rory feeling the pressure? Absolutely. It doesn't mean you have to play into it. So I don't think Bryson was complaining about that. It did seem like he was a little surprised that Rory wasn't talking to him. I don't know if that was him trying to, like, I don't know.
Maybe he was trying to get him on breaking 50 and he wouldn't do it.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
No, I agree. If anyone is surprised by that, it's absurd. You shouldn't play. Well, I mean, not to throw our good buddy Andrew Walker under the bus, but when we played out in Lacombe this past year, he had a pretty stunning collapse to me. And on the first hole of the collapse on the tee, I told him, I said, hey, bud, Trump got shot, eh? And I think I took it out of him a little bit, and then he went on to lose 5 straight holes to me, including the playoff hole. So he can blame the future president at that time for getting shot in the ear for his loss at Lacombe. So you shouldn't talk to your playing partner is what I'm getting at here.
Oh, God, this is just reminding me of my own heartbreak in Lacombe. I finally get to 18 all square. I haven't missed a drive left in my entire life.
Ever.
And dead yank onto the road. And it's over, ladies and gentlemen.
To the old zigzag convenience store across the street.
Yeah, right to it. Okay, it wouldn't be us if I didn't have a Leaf tie-in.
Ooh.
Gotta do it.
What, the omen for Rory?
Not so much an omen.
Okay.
Normally I like omens, okay. but just a tie in here. So, you know, Rory gets asked in the presser, God, I love sports fans. They're the best. If he's going to bring the jacket to Old Trafford, and he, as a good sports fan does, like, yeah, if they can play better,
yes,
I'll bring it there. Great, great answer. But we know Rory McIlroy, of course, you know, like, very strong part of the DP World Tour, former commissioner there, Keith Pelly. Now, the RBC Canadian Open is at the beginning of June.
Oh, my God.
And when Rory McIlroy won his first RBC Canadian Open, it was in the throes of a Raptors title run. And he wore a jersey. They bestowed it to him after, and he took a picture of it wearing the Raptors jersey while hosting our nation's trophy. It was wonderful. Wouldn't it be a scene if Keith Pelly could invite his dear friend Rory McIlroy to, like, drop the puck for a playoff game at Scotiabank? Now, you got to get to, like, a conference final or something to do it. And maybe that's unfair to Corey Connors, but I don't know. There's a tie in there. He has been quoted about having dinner with people. I mean, it was obviously Keith Pelly, because who else would he be talking to about the Leafs at dinner? Mm. There's just some tie-ins there. There's some serendipity. He was here when the Raptors won their chip. Come on. Let it happen. I have talked Leafs with him at the RBC Canadian Open. He's aware of how tortured they are.
Yeah.
Leafs, go on a run and let Rory drop the puck. They won the game. Mike Weir dropped the puck.
But
they lost the series against the Flyers. Don't get me started on that. But they won the game. I don't know if that's an omen or a tie-in, or I'm just saying I really want to see it. But God, Leafs, go on a run and let Rory McIlroy feel a playoff energy in this city when he's here for the RBC Canadian Open in early June.
Buddy, I couldn't love that anymore. That's good parallels there.
It's just a Leaf brain is what that is.
I will say, like, we did a little bit about it on Leafs Talk last night, but, like, it's a lot of crossovers between Rory fandom and Leaf fandom, and this has to be a good omen. It has to be a good omen. The omens are stacking up, but. Like the I'm talking Leafs here now. The Red Wings and Bruins haven't missed the playoffs since 67. It's been 9 straight years that the Leafs have made the playoffs. The last time they did that, the 9th straight year was 67. Rory McIlroy and his fans have gone through all the same heartbreaks that Leaf fans have gone through. My damn Don Waddell jersey was found on the TTC. It's our year, baby. It's our year.
It is. It's our year. Famous last words.
Yes, definitely.
For sure.
Definitely in that 6-game loss to the Ottawa Senators in the first round. It'll be great.
Cannot wait. I was just going to say, this was awesome, man.
Yeah.
It was great to be back podding with you. I know Hawaii stole you from our Masters preview.
I played.
Oh,
I did.
You didn't tell me about this.
I did play. I played, I forget the name of the golf course. It was expensive, but it was nice. It was by the resort I was on. Maybe Coalina Golf Club.
That sounds right. You just tell me that's it, and I'll believe you.
I played at 6:30 a.m. with three American guys who were pretty nice. Had to rent clubs, which added to the price of it. But, you know, playing with rental clubs is really hard. I find it to be a different thing. But, you know, I love playing golf, and it's really nice that the season's starting here soon. I'd like the weather to warm up significantly, but we're heading into golf season in Canada. You know, the RBC Canadian Open's coming up. You and I are going to try to prioritize this, do a few more pods heading into that, heading into the other majors. So I'm really thrilled to be talking golf with you again, Gunnar. I love you, bud. And this was fun.
Yeah, I just needed Rory to win a Masters before I started feeling like doing golf work this year. Okay, is that so much to ask for, people? Apparently, yes. This was fun. I have been waiting. I didn't even know this was true, but I've been waiting my whole life to do this pod with you.
Yes, sir.
And it was everything I could have ever asked for.
Yeah, you're the man.
So are you, but let's be honest, so is Rory. This has been an edition of Testifying, a.k.a. The Golf Show with the Golf Guys, Gunning and McKee.